Well, Martin, I suppose there's nothing new in this weekend preparing for an All-Ireland final in Mayo. What's the mood in the West?
The mood is it's very optimistic. Like, there's a great atmosphere in the place, but I suppose the entire team is immune to it. I mean, they're just living their own world, removed from everything else. And, you know, they're just very focused, I'd say, on the job on hand. But there's no doubt about it, the actual... You know, if you go down the street here, as I was in Castlebar this morning, you can sense the occasion, you can sense the excitement, and you can sense it right across the county. Like, I drove through it the other day, I had to go to North Mayo, and every town, like, as you'd remember Donegal in the past, it just festooned with colour, and, you know, everybody's anticipating just a great occasion, and I suppose the exodus will start today.
Yeah, and I suppose... You know, it's amazing, you know, that you haven't All Ireland fatigue at this stage. You know, given how many you have in the last 5 or 6 years.
Well, you go through. I suppose since 2011, like, it has been a remarkable period, like, in the sense that Mayo have been at the, shall we say, the business end of every championship since then. And you know, if you look at the finals they have been in, you know, between Donegal was it in 2012,
yeah.
Dublin 2013, and again. Last year and now, 2017, if you factor in replays of that, I mean, it's the occasion certainly shouldn't be a mystery to them. And, you know, the players should be well able to cope with that end of things. But they certainly, from a footballing point of view, they have given the people here in the county, irrespective of the result at the weekend, a marvellous, marvellous, marvellous ride over the last kind of 6 or 7 years.
And... Well, I suppose a massive roller coaster one this year as well, given, you know, that you're off to Galway the first day.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I mean, an extraordinary one. You know, the game against Galway, like, the funny thing in that game in Salt Hill, they beat Sligo first game, but then in Salt Hill, I thought they were the better team to Galway, but maybe the sending off in that game with Keith Higgins kind of turned the table somewhat. But you remember, you know, when you look at the qualifiers then, Tom, Derry had the beating at them. Derry had a kick, last kick of the game. James Keel had the kick to win that match. Didn't get it, and Mayo won easily enough in extra time. It was down in Clare to watch them playing Clare, and Clare get them their fill of it. And, like, we mind, you know, they were within an intercept of losing to Roscommon in the drawn match. Like, Aidan O'Shea made a very good interception late in that game. So they have, as you say, it has been a roller coaster very much so, but they seem to have kind of got into a bit of form at the right time in the latter stages of the championship, and should be actually fairly well kind of tuned up for the weekend.
Yeah, I'm not sure which player said it, but one player I saw quoted somewhere during the week that the big turning point was the replay against Roscommon.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I think the kind of the nature of the win there, it was so emphatic that they give the team or infuse a lot of belief into the team, because there had to be doubts. There had to be a degree of self-doubt about the way things were going to then. And I mean, the you know, everything just fell into place for them in that day. They just kind of all of a sudden felt comfortable again in the surroundings in Croke Park. And basically they have kind of picked it up from there. And the win, I think, in particular against Kerry afterwards then, after the replay, was particularly satisfying and, from a psychological point of view, very important to them.
And a real confidence booster heading to, you know, against Dublin, obviously, because, you know, Kerry, everybody was talking about a Dublin-Kerry final.
Well, that's the thing, like, and funny enough with Mayo, and I know from talking to the players and, you know, from my experience living down here, Kerry has always been a team that they, whatever it is about them, it's not that they have feared them, but they have never done particularly well against them. So to beat Kerry in the championship was, a very important achievement.
Yeah, and well, it was the first win in 21 years or something, was
that,
it?
That, at least, yes, that's right. It was the first win in 21 years. And, I mean, going back before that, there were very, very few and far between when Mayo beat Kerry. But the strange thing about it, Tom, they've always enjoyed playing Dublin. You know, whereas they've, I'm not saying fear Kerry, but never are particularly comfortable playing Kerry. They are always kind of, they relish the prospect of playing Dublin. And, okay, people are kind of maybe making Dublin very hot favourites for the weekend, but that suits Mayo to the ground. And these guys that play against them, I think, will be really relishing the opportunity to kind of, as we say, lay down a marker with them and to kind of lock horns with them.
Talk to me about Dublin. I know you regretted my error of them, and I think everybody that follows the game is, and generally they are accepted that what they're going for 3 in a row. That proves it, I suppose.
Exactly, Tom. Like, I mean, the amazing thing about it, three in a row is from our memory. You know, I would remember the Galway three in a row team of the 60s as a young lad, and you remember then the three in a row team that wonderful Kerry team. But the three in a row they're as scarce as hen's teeth. In fact, you go back to in relation to Dublin. Dublin haven't done a three in a row since 1923, that far back, nearly a century ago. And I mean, my admiration for them is huge, because there is no doubt about it. Like, once they came under the baton of Pat Gilroy, they have developed a wonderful culture, a wonderful sense of, you know, what's possible. And the thing about it is the team has evolved year on year. Like, you mind the first win they had, was it in 2011? I think Brian Cullen was captain. Like, yeah. He's no longer heard of. And, you know, Gerard Brennan was a key figure in their defence. But even this year, like what I've seen, you've had Niall Scully came in. You know, Eric Lowndes has become a feature. John Small has become very important. In fact, just for Donegal listeners, John Small's grandmother on his mother's side was a Ballyshannon woman, actually.
Really? What was the name?
Cassidy.
Right.
Cassidy. They had a butcher shop at the bottom of the main street when I was growing up, actually, in Ballyshannon. So that's a wee kind of, a point of interest for the listeners.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant.
Yeah.
So obviously, Mayo are going to have to play very well.
Oh, exceptionally well in every position from the word go. I mean, they cannot afford to let Donegal or to let Dublin build up a lead in them. I feel myself, if Dublin get an early lead and establish themselves and kind of can build incrementally on that as the game goes on, going down the final stretch, they'll pull away.
Yeah.
Because I just believe the quality of their bench exceeds anything that Mayo can call on.
Yeah, and I accept maybe the Carlow game. I think that's something that Dublin have done. You know, they have put teams away early.
Well, this is the thing, and it's interesting you take up that one at Carlow, Tom, because Carlow were the one team that actually, you know, planned forensically to play Dublin in that game. And they borrowed, I suppose, Jim McGuinness's template.
Hmm.
And they gave Dublin probably their toughest game of the championship. And now, obviously, they were never going to score a whole pile. But basically, they were very, very strong defensively. But Dublin, you know, always seem to find a way. Do you mind the last day, like, for example, against Tyrone? I haven't seen a team so disciplined as Dublin in that game, in the way their wing forwards literally stood out in the sidelines. They literally stood in the sidelines, and they played with a wit that no matter how kind of tight Tyrone were going to be, or how kind of, shall we say, they wanted to flood their defence, they were always going to be stretched. I mean, Dublin's ability that day to keep the game spread as wide as possible was quite remarkable. And they just seem to have that facility to adapt and to adjust as the occasion demands. And in that game there, they probably play with a different style completely to the one previously against Kildare, where there was much more of the gung-ho to them.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me, and someone mentioned to me today, in actual fact, has Stephen Rockford the capability and probably the nose that maybe Jim McGuinness has to come up with some kind of a pull a tactic out of the hat, you know, maybe, as we saw in 2012, you know, Donegal planned to score early goals. We saw against Dublin 2014, pushed up on them and, you know.
Yeah. You see, the thing about Stephen Rochford, I suppose, in his credentials before he came in to Mayo were that he was an All-Ireland winner with his club across Malina as a player and with Cora Finn as a manager. So he has had experience of winning All-Ireland, albeit at club level. Now, I think myself, he's been extremely courageous in a lot of the decisions he's made. They wouldn't exactly kind of win him the popularity vote of the year or anything, like in particular the one in last year's All-Ireland where he dropped David Clark for the replay and played Robbie Henley. But even this year, like, you look at his the strength of his conviction, he felt that Aidan O'Shea was the right man to deal with Donaghy in the games against Kerry, and he stuck to his guns on that. Now, admittedly,
he was kind of vindicated in the second day.
Well, it was vindicated the second day, but equally I thought the first day. Now, I know Donaghy was involved in 8 scores in that, Tom. But if you look back on that game, you will notice that very, like, I had done the Munster final. I'd done that at co-commentary in RTE. And in that game, I remember the first 15 minutes or so, Kerry launched high ball after high ball into Donaghy. He won them and laid it off to the two corner forwards who were more or less playing off his shoulder. And they scored regularly and put Cork away at an early stage. But the last day, in the drawn game even with Mayo, Kerry never put in high ball, or rarely put in high ball to Donaghy, because of the fact that O'Shea was in them. And I think, the unintended consequence of that was that the two corner forwards had to play away further out the field, looking for ball. And I think even though O'Shea maybe got the finger pointed at him as not having had a great game, I think his presence in there, in a sense, made Kerry adjust their game somewhat. And it certainly, from Rochford's point of view, vindicated to a degree. And certainly the second day in particular, he probably came up winners on that. In his change actually kind of got the dividend that it had hoped to get.
Yeah, well, of course, he dropped Colin Boyle back, was it, as a sweeper as well? And wasn't it in front of Donaghy, which cut out the... Because Donaghy had...
That's right.
Performance...
But you see, Tom, there's also an issue there when you bring up Colin Boyle. Like, in... The big criticism down here was that Colin Boyle was taken off in every game, probably up to the recent one, between the 51st and 56th minute. Now, the GPS system that they all wear nowadays was probably indicating that it was time to bring him off. But he has since then kind of, I suppose, adjusted his thinking on that and left Boyle on much, much longer. And the effect has been very positive. So I think, in fairness to Stephen Rochford, he has had courage to make changes where they're necessary. They don't always work out, but he probably realises himself, even for next Sunday, that he needs to come up with something slightly different if he is to actually outthink Dublin. Because if you're going to come up with the same thing that didn't bring you success in the past, I think you're doomed to fail again.
What's that likely to be, Martin? Well, first of all, I suppose, where's Aidan O'Shea going to play?
Well, this is the first point. Exactly, Tom. I think Aidan O'Shea will play around the middle of the park. He'll probably list at centre-forward, will start centre-forward, but will drift back between centre-back and centre-forward. But I wouldn't bet money on it, but it wouldn't surprise me if he, for example, threw Paddy Durkin in midfield.
Yeah.
Now, Paddy Durkin has been a sub up to now, has been outstanding when he has come in, but he has, I know from the club here in Castlebar, I watch him regularly playing club football, he has blistering pace.
Yeah.
And he may just ask him to go in, you go in and play on Fenton, and give Fenton all that he wants to in terms of running over the first 20-25 minutes, and just see where it takes you.
Yeah, and Tom Parsons is going to be one of the midfielders.
Well, Tom Parsons also probably will be midfield, but it might then, therefore, if what I'm saying actually manifested itself, Tom, it probably would mean that Shamie O'Shea would be left off the team to begin with. So he will pull something out of the bag, maybe, that hasn't been done up to now.
And up front, you know, there was a general feeling that maybe Mayo hadn't the scoring power that they've had of late, but Jason Doherty and... even, you know, has come up trumps this year.
Aye.
You know, Kevin McLaughlin has scored more as well this year, maybe less.
Well, you see, the funny thing is, I was on another program there a couple of nights ago, and I kind of, in preparation for it, I did a wee look back on the last 5 Dublin Mayo games, and a lot of listeners will be very surprised to hear this statistic. In those last 5 games, Mayo have outscored Dublin. Now, outscored, I'm saying Dublin, by 95 scores to 89.
Right.
Yeah. Now, people say, oh, Mayo haven't got Marky Ford, etc., etc., etc. And fair enough, you'd always love to have a few more forwards, the likes of Michael Murphy. But they have actually outscored Dublin 95 to 89. But the big difference is that Dublin have scored 8 goals to Mayo's 4. And that is probably reason, or that is what, therefore, in those 5 games has meant that Dublin have won 3 of them and 2 have been drawn.
Stephen Cluxton obviously in the kickouts, and he's brought it to a whole new level. Are Mayo going to push up on him?
Well, I think they will push on him. Mayo in the past, Tom, from my memory, have caused Cluxton problems, and they have been able to rattle Cluxton in the sense that they have frustrated his kickouts. And I'd say they'll have worked very closely on that. Now, I'd imagine they will push up close on him, but they will have an awareness, I'd say, of Cluxton's range, and that Cluxton can actually, a little bit like Rory Began in Monaghan, he can bypass midfield if the case demands it or if the situation demands it. And if you mind the last day in particular, early on in the Tyrone game, he hit a most wonderful long kick out over to the Cusick stand side to Niall Scully when all of Tyrone had pushed up on his kick out. So he has that kind of variation in his repertoire that can be sometimes very hard to second guess. But I would say early on, Mayo will definitely try to rattle him in that respect and push up on him and try and see are there flaws that, can they identify flaws or can they get something maybe that might actually disrupt the flow of possession for Dublin.
The other big talking point, I suppose, and it's a fact now in most games, it's gone from a 15-man game to maybe a 19, 20-man game, 21-man game.
Yes.
And it's probably come from rugby where you see, fellas coming on, impact subs, fellas emptying the tank. And as you mentioned, Colin Boyle earlier, a lot of people say that that's probably what's going to decide Sunday's game.
Well, I wouldn't disagree with people who say that. I mean, that would be the fear that I would have for Mayo, in the sense that if you compare the two, there's no comparison, basically, between the two sets of subs. Like, when you look at a possible subs bench with Dublin, with three ex-footballers of the year, Michael Darren McCauley, Paul Flynn, and Bernard Brogan, and you might even see, Dermot Connolly in the subs bench as well. Like, think about the quality that you've available to you there over the last 15, 20 minutes of a game after the Mayo defence has been put to the pin of their collars, to say, with the starting Dublin forwards, And Mayo, in contrast, have maybe two or three very good subs, but when you go down that little bit further, I think maybe them wouldn't have the same degree of quality. They wouldn't have the same calibre of player as Dublin have at their disposal at the moment. And I would agree with people who say that that is ultimately what might decide the outcome of the match.
Is that maybe a reason maybe for holding Paddy Dorcan?
Well, it probably has been up to now the reason for holding Paddy Dorcan. But I'm just wondering, as I said earlier in the interview to you, Tom, are Mayo going to come up with something different this time and maybe start Paddy Dorcan and start him in a position that he hasn't actually played before with the county, which is at the middle of the park? I don't know, to be honest with you, but I do expect that there will be something different.
And they're going to have to come up with something different.
They're going to have to come up with something, but there is no doubt about it, Tom, I don't think they can come up with something spectacularly innovative or spectacularly new with their subs. The subs is what they are. The subs is what you're going to see. There's nobody new to come into that subs bench.
Yeah. Realistically, Dublin are going to be favourites, but can Mayo, there's a general feeling among a lot of people that Mayo actually can finally do with this year. What do you think?
Well, it's a big ask for Mayo. It's a very, very big ask for them. My own view on the Mayo team, if I'm honest about it, they were at their peak in 2015. I think they're at their best, even though last year, like, in fairness to them, they took Dublin within the pin of their collars. Like, they took them right to the final whistle on the 1st of October in the replay. But for Mayo to win this weekend, Tom, every Mayo player has to play nearly the game of their lives. They have to play in a way that they haven't played before, and they have to play it over a full 70 minutes. I mean, every man nearly needs to be going for a man of the match performance. That is the size of the task that's facing them. But one of the things I said earlier to you, they love playing against Dublin.
And have a good enough record against them.
Always seem to be able to kind of, take them to a kick or two of the ball. But I think this time they're playing against a Dublin team that has kind of imperceptibly evolved. It's kind of, as I said earlier, the Scully, the Lowndes, the Smalls, all of these guys coming in.
You didn't even mention Cormac Callaghan.
And didn't mention the young O'Callaghan lad, the centre forward guy, who's been a revelation this year. And, but at the same time, they are very, very, very formidable. And as the point is this, for Mayo to win, every player on the team needs to play out of his skin and need to be very efficient in front of goals, and also get something more from their subs bench that they have got up to now.